Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 15th January 2019, Tuesday. So we will have our Tuesday class. Before that, we will develop the faith, sadha, virya. Then mindfully, we shall prepare for puja. Namo Bansi Sejia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sejia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sejia Moni Fo. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Guansin Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipano bhagavato saukasango sanghang namami. Okay, you all can visit that. Then turn to page 1 of your chanting book. We will chant from the Vandana onward. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musawada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja offering of likes. Gannasarapaditena dipena tamadangsina diloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang Danda sambara yutena dopena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bacana mutamang vanda kanda guno petang etang kusuma santatin pujayami monindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kusumena nena punnena mattena ca hotu mokhang pupang mila yati yata idang me kayo tata yati vinasa bhavang adivasetu nobante paniyang parika pitang anukampang upadaya patikan hatu mutamang adivasetu nobante pale parika pitang anukampang upadaya patikan hatu mutamang adivasetu nobante bojanang parika pitang anukampang upadaya patikan hatu mutamang. Now we will chant the puja aspirations based on our understanding of the significance of all this offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha brings forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay homage, Triple Gem. Buddhang pujami. Dhammang pujami. Sanghang pujami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then today tonight we can have half an hour of silent meditation as usual. You just relax body and mind and silent everything, maintain awareness. Now you can go direct into the four support to develop the meditation. Because by now I believe most of you should have developed the spiritual faculty to quite an extent. If you have the ability to be mindful in the midst of life, your daily mindfulness stable, then you can meditate very easily. The moment you relax and silent, your mind will quiet down. And because your spiritual faculty is there, the mental hindrance will not be there. And because of the spiritual faculty, sati will take over and your mind become very quiet, very still, become very aware by itself. For those whose spiritual faculty are not so stable, and your daily mindfulness also not that stable as yet, there will be some thought, some thinking, but these are relatively mild, not the heedless type. So you just let it be, whatever thought that arise, let it be. Then it will slow down, and it will settle down, and eventually cease. When you can silence your mind and maintain awareness, the awareness will take over. Then you will experience that calmness, the spiritual calmness. They call it piti, very fast, straight away you go in. Then you continue to relax and silence. This piti will transform, become more and more refined until you experience a state of what they call sukhang, which is blissfulness of mind. Then continue to relax into it and maintain awareness until the anapanasati or your object of meditation become very serene, very quiet and very still. It's only when your mind stop or activity or thinking, then only this tranquility state of pasati can arise. Pasati is an enlightenment factor. It is the state of mind that is in the state of tranquility, stillness, no movement, silent and quiet. That is your true mind, your silent mind. And that mind is your meditative mind. That mind can meditate. It can understand many things. It can be aware. And it can awaken to phenomena. Awaken to their universal characteristics of nature. There are three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature of all phenomena or all existential phenomena. When you have the ability to realize that, your mind will transform. You will gain a type of wisdom that will awaken your nature. Then after that, at least your self-delusion will be gone. Sakaya ditti will be rooted out. So once that understanding is there, you would have transformed from a normal human being or putijana into an Arya. At least you are a sotapan. And if you have your past cultivation, if you have trained yourself well, you may even pass by to the second stage of sainthood or third stage, and even to the level of arahantship. Then after that, it's up to you. If you want to continue with the bodhisattva way, you can. Otherwise, you continue to silent, relax, and develop the understanding until this wisdom become very, very stable. And after that, a lot of things will happen. Your mind, your consciousness, your nature will transform. And inside knowledge keep on arising. Wisdom keep on arising. Okay, with this, I will let you meditate on your own. Then I will ring the bell after the half an hour is up. and slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness or mindfulness that you have developed for as long as you can. Then these are the mind state you have trained, and you have to bring it out into your daily life to develop the stability of daily mindfulness, to cultivate sati sampajana. Okay, now turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantha Chakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Deyata Saddhammang Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokkhadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Namo Atassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa Iti peso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vijacharana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purisa Dhammasarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanayiko Pachyatang Veditabho Vinohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ujupatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyaya Patipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samichi Patipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakeneyo Anjali Karaneyo Anutarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pajam. Buddhang Pujayami. Dhammang pujayami. Sanghang pujayami. Okay, you can be seated. Then we can continue with our Dhamma study. Yeah? We are, I think, towards the end of chapter 24. Yeah? Yeah, we are at page 434. Yeah, so turn to page 434. Yeah, we should be able to finish chapter 24 by today. Okay. Oh, sorry. Not page 434, 416. We are at page 416, sorry. Yeah. We got another 3 pages to go. Page 416, Reason to Believe in Rebirth. Chapter 24, The Buddha and His Teaching by Venerable Narada. If one believes in the present and the future, it is logical to believe in the past. If there is a reason to believe that we have existed in the past, then surely there are no reason to disbelieve that we shall continue to exist after our present life has apparently ceased. You look at note 1. Eh? We have come to look upon the present as the child of the past and as the parent of the future. So this is written by this author, D.H. Hartley. Eh? So this one is by deduction using logic. If indeed a strong argument in favor of past and future life, that in this world, virtuous persons are very often unfortunate, and vicious person prosperous. So this is what a lot of people would put forward. Yeah? And that is a very strong argument. Yeah? You know, in a certain religion, they believe there is no rebirth. There is only one life. After this life, it's either you go eternal heaven or you are condemned to eternal hell. So the question is very simple. If one life decides everything, then what are we looking at? Then this particular religion is very difficult for people to accept, because if you don't believe his religion, after you die, no matter how virtuous you are condemned to eternal hell. And for to them, non-believers are really deluded and evil people. They don't care how you behave and how you develop your mind. They just say you must believe. Otherwise, there is no salvation. So when I was young, I say if that is a religion, forget about it. Because if a virtuous person, let's say very generous, very kind, very pious, do a lot of right thing, but because he doesn't profess that religion, according to that religion, he will be condemned to eternal hell, not just for one life, go down there, but eternally. Then on the other hand, they say that God is ever-loving, most compassionate, and yet that God can also condemn living beings to eternal hell. Then it's also written in the holy book that all creation are creation of their gods. If everything is created by them and yet they separate them into believer and non-believer and condemn the non-believer, I find it very difficult to reconcile. Then one life, what do you think? In this existential world of ours, after you have gone through life, after you have seen all the things and experienced all the things, what do you think? Is there such thing as rebirth? Is there a past life? Or you think it's just this life finish? We open up for discussion. What do you think? Check inside. Truly, sincerely. The mic is here. Anybody want to try? Come, take the mic. What happened to the rest? Still meditating. Never mind. Anybody want to try? Cannot be. What do you think? It's quite a straightforward question, isn't it? Let us start from young. You can never deny you were born from the womb of your mother, isn't it? True or not? But when you were born, are you really aware? Until what age can you start to recording or have a memory of what your childhood is? First 1-2 years, do you have any memory or not? You hardly have. For me, I got no thought, nothing, until I reached the age of 5. That is a pure mind. What do you think? I got no thought.
Unconditioned, and that's a pure mind.
Not only that, I got no thought. And nothing can condition that mind at that time. I was so naive, so cute. My father took photo of me at the age of 2 and 3. And I look. I can never recall anything. Then, from that facial photo, I knew it's a pure mind. Because after I connect, I can look and I can know. Then I can only recall when I was 5 over years, and that time I hardly talk, I hardly think. My grandmother was so worried for me. My grandmother thought I dumb. You know what is dumb? Cannot talk. In Hakka, he called me Alo. He said, I'm so worried you cannot talk. He said, because you don't talk. My mother can feel me. My mother very good. My mother said, among all the 9, I'm the easiest to raise. And when she conceived me, she gave birth to me, she know. She was full of joy and she has good life. And my nature bring forth great condition for my family. Even later on, the Tong Su, my father, he liked the Tong Su, he consulted those who know how to read and interpret all this. Then they measure my bone. And inside they also predicted, I will bring honor to my family. And I will bring a lot of wholesomeness to my family. That's why my father knew. My father and my mother, they love me a lot. And they know, because before I really came to this world, when I was being conceived, my father has a lot of good moments. His life as a, that time he was just a salesman, and he was doing very well. And the moment I was born that year, he sold 1 ticket. I think he sold less than 10 tickets. One of them struck Social Welfare Second Prize, Singapore that time. And the commission was 5,000 ringgit at that time. That time called dollar. We are not separated yet, Malaya. So 5,000 commission, the shop owner and my father, he shared 2005-ish. And that time the money was so big, purchasing power was so high. That time 1 cent can buy thing, you know. Then he bought the shop lot, 200 ringgit only. One shop lot, no. Building, land, lock, stock and barrel. So that was how the family big. Yeah, 200 ringgit in my hometown, Simpang Kuala, Alustar. That was in the year 1950-something. I was born in 54. And my father was full of joy. And a lot of things happened. So what I want you to figure out is, we cannot deny that we were born from our mother's womb. But we can't even recall this life, understand? That few years when we were born. So let's say you die, then you take birth and conceive in the mother's womb. Do you think you can recall anything before that? Because when the moment you were born until you are 3 or 4 years old or 5 years old, you can't recall anything. Then how are you going to recall those before you? It's almost impossible. You understand? There is a difference for my mind somehow. You understand? It's not the same for my mind. And the consciousness that take rebirth is just a single moment of consciousness, a rebirth consciousness. For Bodhisattva, it's a pure mind, born of love and compassion, no delusion. For the rest, is born of the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. That's why there is avijja, ignorant condition, rebirth, consciousness. So if that been the situation, we can conclude that there is rebirth. That's why we can't recall. But there are other evidences. Because things that we determine, let's say this life we determine very strongly, we make aspiration, we determine very strongly and we vow to do certain things. I tell you, this is what you can plant into your nature or through the willpower, your mind, you determine, you vow, lokwan, etc. Then, through the effect of karma, it will come back to you. Because this is what you have determined, resolved and vow very strongly. That's how it comes. This is part of nature's law. So that's why some of these people who are born into the present civilization as they grew up, then when they experience certain thing in life, it creates a condition for them to recall. Recall what they want to do. Recall their vow. Recall their willpower, their determination, everything. That's why certain kids, when they are young, they already know what they want to do. And they have certain talent that they have developed. And they are very clear about what they want. These are people with strong mind, determined. And most of them are special beings. Of course, some are cultivators. Some are great beings who come for certain reason and purpose. But these are extraordinary people. So, apart from that, we look at the world. Everything that we come to experience or come to perceive, I used to ask around when I was young, because when the Christian religion say God created, everything is created by God, I check. I realize, no, God never created. That's why they don't understand what is Mother Nature. But to them, nothing can be created out of nothing. You can't create anything from nothing. True or not? You need to have things to create things. You see that point? So to them, the logical mind cannot understand. If there is no God that is responsible for all these heavenly planets, everything to them is in harmony, following nature's movement, but they don't know it's nature. They say it must be God's creation. How can the heavens be so orderly? How can everything be so orderly? So because of that argument, they say there must be a God, an almighty being that is responsible for all this creation. But I look around. Everything is just the way it is. I realize they come about naturally. And later on, as I grew up as a student, when I studied science, I studied geography, then I realized day and night also not created by God. It's because of our planet rotating on its axis, and the sun is over there. So there were a lot of things, not what the human being think. They say the sun rises from the east and sets in the west. The sun never set and never rise. It is our planet that rotates and revolves around the sun. And every rotation is 24 hours. That's why we got day and night. And because you rotate on the axis, there is climate and all those things. And all this we study in geography. And we can see it happening. That's why I like geography. Geography was my best subject, then science and math. I score A1 in Form 3 and Form 5. Geography. Geography, really, I don't need to study on. I'm very good at geography. Then science, math. Also, the way my nature come, I like these subjects. Then spiritual also, same. I start to search when I was very young. The moment when I know science, I know geography, my mind start to probe. That's why after Form 3, towards the end of Form 4, I start to probe. Then a lot of questions starts to arise, the inquiry. I look at the sky, the star. Then I say, who am I? What am I doing here? What is this universe all about? How come it is so immense? Because as a science student, I know the Big Bang Theory, the light years of boundaryless universe. Even after you can see using the Hubble telescope and all those things for billions and billions of light years. We are talking about 16 billion light years, the furthest that we can see. There is still no boundary, no end. Space is still vast, immense. Then who are you? What are you? You are just one miserable living beings or human being on this planet Earth. Our planet Earth is just one of the planet that evolve around the star, the sun. And the sun is only one of the trillions and trillions and trillions of star systems in this universe. Even one galaxy, one Milky Way, the number of stars are countless. That's why the Buddha, during his time, when people asked him, he was able to tell these people. He said, the number of stars up in the heaven, they are more than the sand on the Ganges. You know Ganges River, how long or not? How much sand are there? Each every grain of sand, if it's equivalent to one star, the number of stars up there in the heaven are more than the sand in the Ganges. Who can know that? Unless it's a Samasambuddha. Then when I look around, everything comes about orderly. Then inside the nature, when I inquire, you have to meditate to understand, otherwise you cannot understand. That's why straight away the nature knew I have to meditate. So when I first encounter the Four Noble Truths, the search all end, I knew this is the truth, this is the real one. How did it impact on me so strongly? The moment I saw that one, before that I told you Form 4, Form 5, I was with my classmates searching for truth, wanting to understand, and I never looked at Buddhism until I received that first book, What Buddhists Believe, which my classmate sister gave to me. Then the moment I read through, I was so full of joy when the book told me what my mother was practicing was Chinese tradition. nothing to do with the Buddhist teaching. It's non-dhamma. Oh, I saw a spoon of joy. Then I want to know what the Buddha's teaching is all about. Then he mentioned the Four Noble Truths. The moment I read the Four Noble Truths, my nature straight away understood what that Four Noble Truths is. And there was so much joy. I say, who can 2,600 years ago can come out with this type of understanding? He must be the real one. Because he can summarize to me all of life, not only the mundane, including the super mundane. And he summarized all of life into just Four Noble Truths. And everything is inside there, mundane. Oh, I really salute him at that time, and I knew inside very clearly, no need to search. This is it. That's why from that moment onward, I went into the study of the Dhamma. Then immediately when I entered uni, I met the author of the monk on the first day at the lecture hall. Then I took the address. Then I went to the Brickfield Temple. That's how I started. Yeah. And there were a lot of things that happened after that. Because the moment I come back that night, I meditate. I don't know how to meditate, but I went in. I sat there for 4 hours without knowing that it's 4 hours. To me, it was like only half an hour at the most. But I was sitting there for 4 hours. And I went into this formless state, the infinite space. That's why the mind, when it withdraws, it's like very short. But the time passed by very fast. It's already 4 hours. It's just like I went in, have a glimpse of it, then I withdraw. Then I came out. I thought at the most half an hour. I look at the watch, 4 hours. And my mind becomes so still and so serene after that. And for a few days, that calmness, the stillness, the serene state was with me. Then I tell myself, this is real meditation. But I didn't know at that time that was just absorption meditation. Yeah, I went into one pointedness, then anapanasati, and the absorption. Yeah. But of course, I also used the one pointedness to push, and I went to another dimension, the infinite space. So all this, it just happened. And this line I never learned, nobody taught me. And how come my nature know how to do all this? And it just come and show it to me, what this thing is. Then later on, as I grew up, I saw a lot of things, a lot of signs came. Then I knew it's meant to be, for me to understand, it's from my past. Then when I look at nature, very strange, when I was very young, I knew there is something there. But I look at the trees, I look at all the thing in nature. I keep on seeing this flow, this movement. Then I was asking myself, how come I can see? What is he trying to tell me? At that time, I don't understand. But I knew inside that this is something very important. Actually, that was mindfulness. I didn't know. Well, my mind was naturally quiet and silent when I observed. It's just like that, quiet. That time I don't know how to meditate. And yet, I have this ability. It's because from the past. That's why you will inherit them. You will have the natural tendency to develop them through what you have done in the past. It could be your vow, your whatever constant practice and cultivation, and also your aspiration, your determination. Because when you determine very strongly, this understanding will come. Then whenever there is truth, this nature will understand. Then whatever retreat or meditation you go to, you will know how to do on its own. You will never follow the standard practice or standard instruction. Because I find it not proper. Whatever they give, I give it a try. I realize this is not for me. Not right. then I just leave it. Then I just do on my own. And nobody taught me, and I just know how to do. Then I found out myself all this meditative thing. None of my teacher really teach me meditation, do you know? They just talk to me. And they talk to me on different topic, different thing. But my nature figure it out very fast, understand it very fast. Then develop the cultivation on its own. So, as far as rebirth is concerned, for me, it's an automatic understanding. Now, I look at how things happen. Then I knew it cannot be one life. It has to be many lives. We are through science, I know we have existed for billions and billions of years. Then I look at our planet Earth through half-life, carbon dating and all those things. They say our planet is at least 4 to 5 billion years old. Then how can our civilization be just the last 5 to 6 thousand years? You understand? If it existed for so long, don't tell me our human race is the first human race to arise. No. Definitely there must be a lot more before us. That's why it's recorded in the history. They talk about the Sumerian, the Atlantis civilization. These are the two civilizations before ours. Ours, I don't know what they call. What do they call? Ours. Before us was the Atlantis, then the Sumerian. Ours, I don't know what they call. Yu Chan, you know? You don't know also, Yeah. There will be a name. I don't know what name they are going to give. Because the one before us was the Atlantis civilization. Then the civilization before the Atlantis was the Sumerian. There are certain historical records of this civilization. They have managed to, but it's all through historical, archaeological finding, Anasana, which they try to conclude. Otherwise, this thing, because it seems every civilization change, there is this major movement of our planet's continental profile. Means during the time of the Atlantis civilization, our ocean were highland. And the highland now, like the Himalayas, all those things, in the past they were ocean. So all this happened, that's why you hardly see any of those previous civilizations' monuments or construction. The only thing you see are the Egyptian pyramid, isn't it? And some of the, what they call, in Peru, they call this what? Machu Picchu. I don't know how to pronounce. It's in the mountain and all those things. So there are many things. If you look at history, you look at the world as it is, you have that type of understanding, you can understand why it has to be that way. Then later on, my nature can understand, because I went to Japan. Then this Ogawa, you remember? Ogawa, the happy science. He wrote a few books. His book is actually quite interesting. You know what did he write? He write about our, you see, our various, we call it the 31 plane and all those things. But the way he divide it is more interesting. He call it the dimension. The first dimension, the second dimension, the third dimension, the fourth dimension, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, until the 14th dimension beings. And to him, the seventh dimension onward, he call it the Bosatsu. Bosatsu means they are bodhisattvas. And to him, bodhisattva, not necessarily spiritual cultivator. even the great emperors, the great warrior, the great politician, the great leaders and all the scientists that came and contribute to civilization, they are all great beings which he classified as Bosatsu, or in our term is called Bodhisattva. Then from there they evolve to their perfection, their cultivation, and they reach the eighth dimension. The eighth dimension being a very, very advanced Bodhisattva, oh, very advanced. Then after that, you reach the ninth dimension. So according to him, Jesus Christ is only at the eighth dimension. According to him, don't go and quote me. Then he said, our Sakyamuni Buddha is in the ninth dimension. According to him. Then he said, there are 10 dimension beings. 11, 12, 13, and 14 dimension beings. Then he talked about all this civilization. He got described. He said, each civilization will exist for about 30 to 50,000 years. After that, wipe off. Then another civilization come. So he got a lot of this story, records and all those things. You go and read, it's quite interesting, but just have an open mind. Because this is according to his description. Then he also has some prediction. So the prediction, I think he wrote this book in the year 2000, I think. And he got prediction until 2060, about what will happen, what will, it's on a general scale, very general scale. So if you want to really go and find out, you can go and Google. If they don't allow you to read, means they want to sell to you. I was told the book are not cheap. It's quite expensive. But this book was given to me by my classmate who want me to follow him to Japan to find out about this teaching. That's why I got the book. And when I read through, it was quite interesting actually. That was the year 2006, I think. So there are a lot of these beings around who can share with you their understanding in a different way. So coming back to rebirth, to me, it's a natural understanding that conclude there must be past life. Otherwise, what happened to me, my nature, cannot be the way it is. Then I find the Buddha's teaching very complete, and that describes very completely and very thoroughly about what this rebirth is all about. Rebirth is not reincarnation. You know the difference, isn't it? Do you know the difference between reincarnation and rebirth or not? Cannot remember already. What is reincarnation? There is a soul that transmigrate and go into the new body, because they believe this soul will continue, where it don't die. But the Buddha said no. The moment the death consciousness happens, it will condition a rebirth consciousness if there is avijja, ignorance. If there is no avijja, it ceases. Then you become arahant or beyond. But if you are a bodhisattva, you can have the understanding to come back, because your karmic nature is there, your spiritual nature is there, your vow is there. And when you die, you don't have avijja. But if you want to come back, you can arise a pure thought because of your first vow. Out of love and compassion, you come for the living being. You vow to liberate the living being from samsara, from all suffering. So that vow is really out of love and compassion for living beings. That's why it can come back. It can condition another form of mind. But there is no avijja involved. So this is rebirth. A new consciousness. Whether it's conditioned by ignorance for normal puttajana or bodhisattva who come with a pure mind. So these are the two possibilities of rebirth. Whereas the reincarnation theory is that soul continue. That one I know is not correct because that soul cannot continue. Understand? If it continue means when it immediately go into that body, you will recall everything. Isn't it? Because it's a soul. Understand? It's like the consciousness that is now, if it was spontaneous birth or immediate birth, you will recall, yeah. But how come there is none? Because it's just a rebirth consciousness. It takes time for the DNA, everything, the organ to be formed, the senses to be formed. Then that consciousness, single rebirth consciousness, slowly, slowly evolve and get conditioned into what it is, become the complex human consciousness that is trapped inside. But the only difference is under the rebirth theory that the Buddha was able to postulate is where he saw and he knew what all this happened. Then he said there is a karmic nature where each and every form of mind, when you come, you will be born of it, heir to it, conditioned, supported by it, and you are what you are because of that karmic nature. Then you need to meditate and connect before the spiritual nature can come in and you can inherit whatever cultivation you have developed. So the rebirth understanding or theory that the Buddha postulated is very different. It has got nothing to do with reincarnation. And yet, it explains everything, the way things are. Yeah. That's why, to the Buddha, is that each segment of birth that you come, they are all different, understand? We are different. Life, you take different birth. Sometimes you are born as a human, sometimes born as non-human, sometimes born as animals, fishes, and chicken, pig, and other things. So I saw Yun Chan today bring a lot of nice pig for offering. So, which one is you? When you are a bird, is that you? When you are a chicken, is that you? When you are a pig, a snake, an animal, is that you? When you are a human being, even when you are an emperor, or you are a peasant, or you are a demon, peta, non-human, devas and other things, which one is you? Countless of them, no. All these are not you. They are just your segmented life, understand? Karmically conditioned out. That's why the Buddha said that one is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, not you. Impermanent, goes the way of nature. You attach and cling through self-delusion, you suffer. You need to understand that. If you don't understand that, you will suffer. So if all these are not me, then who am I? What am I? Because these are all mind make, understand? We come through karmic nature and we are born into this conditioned world that has this nature's law, the five universal order of nature. And these are the nature's law that governs all of life and existence. And this form of mind is subject to it. But there is a nature within the form of mind where we can realize and connect. And that one is never born. That is the eternal nature. That's why you must realize your eternal nature. The true mind, the original mind, the source, the oneness nature. And that is what meditation is all about. You have to return to that source or return to realize that true nature within you that was never born, the eternal life. And when you realize that, then you know that one never born. Because it's never born, it's the eternal nature. That's why it will never grow old, get sick, and never die. But that one cannot come out and live life. Do you understand? To come to this existential world, to live life, to experience all this, you need a karmic nature, the condition of form and mind. That's why the whole understanding and cultivation is not easy, not what you think. Every time that karmic nature creates a form and mind for you to come, it's either you come through avijja, ignorance, or later on as you evolve and develop the understanding, you come as a bodhisattva. When you come as a bodhisattva, you are different. You are beautiful. You have the understanding, the perfection, the parami, the support. But if you come as an ignorant being, a normal puttujana, I can tell you, you suffer like anything. And your life is always up and down. You will have a lot of misery, born of delusion. So this is the secret of life, understanding all this law. There are two aspects. The law within the conditioned world, which is the Dhamma. And the unconditioned, which is the supramundane. That one, you need wisdom to transcend the mundane. Yeah. So when you understand the supramundane, you will know how to live within the mundane. Otherwise, you don't know how to live. There is avijja, there is ignorance. So this segmented line of form and mind is very important. So it is because through this understanding, the Buddha understood the secret of life. All of life. Yeah. That's why this rebirth theory is not just a hypothesis or a postulation. It is through direct experience that the Buddha came to understand that this is part of nature's law within the conditioned world. And this is how things happen. And this is how that nature can evolve. The nature needs this type of evolution for it to become different. That's why it can be perfected until it becomes a omniscient one, Sammasambuddha. So that it can have this all-knowing knowledge, understanding. That's why the nine great virtues of the Buddha, know of the world. So he is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. Endowed with virtue and wisdom, perfect in all aspects of training. Yeah. So this is the uniqueness of the Buddhist teaching. That's why this chapter is very interesting. Yeah. I don't know about you all. Huh? What do you all think? You seem not to have the understanding of to accept whether one life or many lives. Can you all really have the understanding and really tell yourself there must be past life? Otherwise the world cannot be what it is. Otherwise I cannot be what I am. Yeah. Then when you have this full understanding, it's very clear that everything is like that. Otherwise it cannot be. Life cannot be the way it is. Yeah. Even scientists will know. The scientific law, they obey that law. You have the understanding, you progress very fast. So the spiritual law also same. You have that understanding and you put it into practice. You realize everything follow this law. Then everything is so beautiful. But it is so much more difficult than science, the spiritual law. You know why or not? That segmented life had to die many times and come back many times for you to learn all this. Do you understand? And every time you come, you can never remember any of this. But your nature is there, understand? You have cultivated, perfected. Then like this life, my form and mind, this particular form and mind, this life, this segment of my life, you call brother Theodore. How come since birth until now, it know what it is? And it can inherit and recall everything. Nobody taught me. A lot of things I told you, I never learned this life. How is this possible? If it's not because of past cultivation, perfection. I'm an English educator. How can I understand Mahayana teaching? And I never studied Mahayana teaching. Nobody taught me. They have the translation, but nobody taught me. The moment I read, I understand. Even the Diamond Sutta, I told you, there is no real teaching. It only teaches you how to cultivate. What type of mind to develop, to cultivate. Yeah. You have to cultivate to that level where Hui Ning and the Diamond Sutta teach. Means you have to realize the stage of no thought. Yeah. That is the first hallmark. You cannot reach that state, you cannot get enlightenment. Then after that, you develop your wisdom further until you realize the stage of no mark. No mark of a self-cultivating, no mark of living beings, no mark of Dhamma, life, existence, everything. Yeah. Then after that, only you have the ability to connect to your nature. Then when that nature shines forth, your mundane mind collapse. Then you can be at the third phase. You can cultivate until your mind has got no dwelling. It doesn't dwell anywhere. Where that nature shines forth, then nature is ever mindful, ever present. It's just like that. That's why it's just specific phenomenal awareness or spacious awareness without a center. It's just that nature. Because mundane mind is no more. It doesn't hold, it doesn't dwell, it doesn't cling or hold. It cannot. So these are the cultivation that the Diamond Sutta mentioned. But luckily, Hui Ning also taught that way. And these are for Bodhisattvas. All Sammasambuddha gain their perfection of wisdom and enlightenment through cultivating the Heart Sutta and the Prajna Paramita Sutta, which is the Heart Sutta, and the Diamond Sutta. That's why these two teachings are very powerful. They are the highest teaching. So this is what you need to develop as understanding with regards to the beauty of the Buddha's teaching, the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching. Then you have to reflect, contemplate deep into it. Based on what I have told you today, you listen to the recording again. Then you can slowly develop that understanding. Because it's not a theory anymore. What you understand, what you realize, and what you can actually develop the understanding of the full picture. Yeah. It's so clear. Everything is so beautiful. It's just like in the year 1973 when I got the book. The Fountain of Truth. The first book, What Buddhists Believe, by the late chief, Kesari Dhammananda. Straight away, no more doubt. That's it. No need to search anymore. Then until today, that teaching is still so perfect, so beautiful, so powerful, so unique. That's why I can write in my seminar book, The Secret of Life, both mundane and supramundane. They are all there. All of life. Nobody can do that. Even my nature at that time, if I were to be the Sammasambuddha, unless I have that perfection. Otherwise, as a form of mind, I come, even if I can realize the enlightenment. If it's not because of the Sammasambuddha's teaching, the Four Noble Truths, I cannot summarize all of my understanding into just Four Noble Truths. I knew my nature cannot. Because the understanding is so immense. It connects to everything in the self. Then how to summarize it into Four simple truth and yet so powerful and so complete. That's why only a Sammasambuddha can do it. Otherwise, to share this understanding, it's not easy, do you know that? But there are so many things that it touches on. That's why the Buddha summarized them under the Four Noble Truths. Then from there, the teachings spin off. All of the essential Dhamma come out from the Four Noble Truths. That's why that is the beauty of his teaching, the uniqueness of his teaching. And his Four Noble Truths is so simple and yet so complete and so beautiful. All of life, mundane and super mundane, all that. Until today, no author can see that and write about that. They only talk about the Four Noble Truths, describe them, but they cannot understand what is it. The first Noble Truth explain the reality of life and existence. Everything you do in life and existence is within the Four Noble Truths. And this is the mundane aspect. You understand? Complete. Then the second Noble Truth is to give you the answer why you suffer. The cause of suffering, which is due to your self-delusion, the condition you to attach grasps onto the fine aggregate of form and mind. That is the secret teaching. That is the answer to all your suffering. So these two truths, complete, mundane. Then the third noble truth, he said, suffering need not be. Enlightenment, the here and the now, Nibbana, can be realized. That is the supramundane. You understand? And he not only tell you it's possible, he even explained to you how you can cultivate it and perfect it under the fourth noble truth. That's why the fourth noble truth is the meditation, the noble eightfold path, which is the middle path. That's why his first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, straight away he said, avoid the two extremes of self-mortification and sensual indulgence. Keep to the middle path, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. And this is the one, is it? You cultivate it, it will lead to the end of all suffering, the realization of enlightenment in the here and the now before you die, which is the realization of Nibbana. And this is the supramundane aspect. So you cultivate the Fourth Noble Truth, came to the realization, enlightenment, then you transform and become an enlightened being. And when you become an enlightened being, you can get to live the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda, means the life of an enlightened being, free of suffering, with a tranquil mind, full of wisdom and virtue and understanding, with clarity. That is what you will be able to develop. And this is the beauty of his teaching, the marvel of his teaching. That's why it's so beautiful. And it's just Four Noble Truths. It's so beautiful. I look at it. How can you find anyone who can tell you all these things and summarize them into just four beautiful truths? Even at that time, when I was in lower six, I was full of joy when I read that Four Noble Truths. It's like I knew this truth before, and nobody explained to me, you know, at that time. Straight away, I knew what it is. The only thing I didn't know was the three turning until you asked me to teach. Because I was doing the second turning without knowing it's the second turning. But I like to contemplate, I like to reflect, I like to inquire deep into truth. And my teacher, Ajayantra, always reminded me no less than six times. Every time I meet him when I'm alone with him, he reminded me. We choose contemplate until very, very clear. He keep on reminding me. That's why I had a lot of respect for him. And he taught me many things. Very simple Dhamma that is not in the book also. Because these are the things I contemplated it out myself too.
After he mentioned, I reflect on it. It was so beautiful. And these are the Dhamma that you need, not the book one, not the knowledge one. Yes. Yeah, use the mic, huh, for the recording. Yeah, Yun Chan. Push it out, huh?
Yeah. Only when your mind is very quiet, then yeah, only you contemplate.
Correct. Mm. You don't have to be in a state of stillness, notice. When you are in the contemplative state, means you are in a quiet locality, understand? You are not preoccupied with things. You are not doing anything. You are just in a tranquil setting or quiet place alone. It can be in the house, in a park, or in a quiet place. Anywhere. Nobody talk to you, interact with you, or disturb you. Then you reflect. During those moments, but you must have mindfulness. Otherwise, you cannot. You must have mindfulness. And the mindfulness don't have to be very, very continuous. No. Mindful in the sense that the thought will not arise. When you are mindful and you reflect, you just throw out the inquiry. Like I teach you all. Huh? Why did the Buddha summarize under the First Noble Truth all of suffering as the attachment to the five aggregate of form and mind? And he said, these five aggregates of grasping is the cause of suffering. Upadana khandas. Dukkha. So you have to inquire, why did the Buddha say this? How can I understand it? Then when I reflect, then the first thing that came to my mind was, what is this five aggregate of form and mind? True or not? Correct or not? Otherwise, how to put it to test? Because he said it is due to your self-delusion that conditions you to grasp onto this five aggregate of form and mind that he said is the cause of suffering. If you don't even know what the five aggregate is, then how can you put to test? True or not? That's why I reflected, I contemplated. Then I realized the five aggregate was so easy. I straight away knew it was not written in the book. They only mentioned the five Pali words. Understand? Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. But I don't look at the word. Because I straight away realize the physical body is the form, first aspect. Then the second aspect is the consciousness trapped inside. Then I ask myself, what can my mind do? That's why I was able to teach you all. If you want to know the four aggregate of mind, you ask yourself, what can my mind do? It can feel, it can perceive. Correct or not? It can arise mental thinking, mental states, mental volition, sankhara. Then it can be conscious. Conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you think, how you feel and think. Then I realized, the Buddha is so wise. He break the mind into four aggregates for you to understand. Because these are very important aggregates. And the mind arises one at a time, even though very fast. You can be at the moment of feeling, moment of perception, moment of mental states or thinking or sankhara activity or volition. Or it can be at the moment of consciousness, the seeing consciousness. It will stay there. That's why they are called aggregate, heaps, heap, one by one. But they move very fast because mind is a forerunner of all things. Mind, lightning speed, very fast. So when I reflected, I realized, hey, correct, this is a five aggregate. If I attach to body, I suffer. If I attach to my feeling, I suffer. If I attach to what I perceive, I suffer. If I attach to my mental state, my emotion, my fear, my worry, my anxiety, even my calmness, I suffer. Well, these are conditioned arising state, dependent originating, impermanent, lead to suffering if I attach. Then I realize, hey, this is beautiful. Then the fine analogy that he gave is even more beautiful. Consciousness is like a magician. Yeah. Open my eye like magic, all created already. Close my eye, all gone. The hearing also manifested already. Consciousness manifested outside. then I realize the external form that I see through my perception, I bring to mind. Then I understand the second aspect, the mental fire gate. That's why I can teach you all. And no book write about it until today. The two aspects of the fire aggregate, especially the mental one. And this is what the Buddha taught under the dependent origination. That's why when I inquire, I reflect, I realize it was so beautiful. And everything just falls into place. That's why this nature inside straight away understands. Then when it understands, it breaks free. Then it was able to develop the stability of mindfulness to insight. Then it saw this. All the movement activity. That's why you need daily mindfulness. Without daily mindfulness, you cannot see them. You have to see them at the moment of their arising, the sustainer, and then they're disappearing. Each and every phenomenon, they are like that. That's the reason why I told you, oh, truth is everywhere. Why can't you see? In the midst of life and nature. They are everywhere. And what is truth? The universal characteristics of nature. They are everywhere in the midst of life and nature. For those who see, they always see every moment, every instant. Everything is like that. That's why when you have this ability to see in that way, with that type of awakening and realization, not only there is no more doubt, your whole nature transforms. Your whole understanding transforms. You become a totally different living being. Then you look at nature. You look at life. You look at each and every form and mind. You start to develop the compassion. Out of love and compassion, living beings become the way they are because of ignorant delusion. They grasp, they cling. They hold and they suffer. And they still don't know what is going on. Still the great hoo-ha, arguing, having conflict, getting unhappy, miserable, hate people. Got time to hate. Got time to become angry and miserable. If you don't understand life, you will do all those foolish things. Understand? No? Life is so beautiful, so wonderful. Why can't you just live? Go and worry about this, worry about that. Get angry with people, fight with people, become emotional, and create suffering not only for yourself, your loved one, and everybody. That is not life. Understand? No? That is stupidity. That is ignorant. That is delusion. You can have such beautiful and wonderful life. Every moment, every instant, everywhere. Why are you not living it? Why are you not in the midst of it, experiencing it? That's why there is so much joy in having this understanding. And life can be so beautiful. But living beings are not able to understand all this. Still fighting, competing, challenging each other, doing all the crazy things. In the name of what? Excitement, joy. That's why they are so heedless. They drink, they torment themselves. They overwork, they overstress, and they destroy and harm their own body. They pollute their own consciousness and mind, and because of that, they pollute the world. And they cause so much karmic negativity to their own karmic nature, to the extent that they can't even remedy it, because they don't understand what is going on. So this is really pitiful when you don't have wisdom, when you don't have the understanding of this teaching. Life can really be difficult, tough. Even though I used to share with you all, we are in the golden age. Golden age in the sense that nowadays there are so much things in life that we can get to experience, and if we have the means to even enjoy. then why are you not having this understanding to see them, to use them? Yeah. The multimedia, the world of multimedia, the digital technology, then the whole world of fashion, even what they call travel, destination, sight and sound, beautiful homes, then even on the video technology, the TV technology and all those things, now handphone, everything is so sophisticated, so convenient. Information technology, now you can receive everything on that handphone, or you watch the TV, the video. Then even sports nowadays, so fantastic. Then you can even have access to many things, politics, world news, everywhere you get to know them. Then all the happenings. And all these things are not available 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And from now onward, every year is going to move and evolve, even at a greater pace. And you cannot keep up with all this understanding and develop all this wisdom or right view to make use of it. Then it's a waste. Understand, we can be in such beautiful era, the golden age, and yet you don't get to live it, really live it, and be part of it with joy, with understanding and happiness. Why are so many living beings living in the golden age of ours still having problem, misery? Some going through war, fighting, over what, I don't know. And there are still a lot of suffering beings. It's because of karma, understand? Mainly karma. If it's not because of karma, all this will not be the way it is. That's why the evolution of consciousness is very important. The understanding is very important. For the world to become a better world, consciousness must evolve. So for it to evolve, there must be more beings that has the understanding, the Dhamma, so that there is less of this wrong teaching, division and all those things. Oh, 10:15 already, I better finish off the chapter first, before we discuss further. Okay. Well, we're still at page 416 on here. Okay, I read a bit faster. We are born into states created by ourselves. If in spite of our goodness, we are compelled to lead an unfortunate life, it is due to our past evil karma. If in spite of our weakness, we are prosperous, it is also because of your past good karma. The present good and bad deeds will, however, produce their due effect at the earliest possible opportunity, means whenever there is condition. Then a Western writer say, whether we believe in the past existence or not, it forms the only reasonable hypothesis which bridges certain gaps in human knowledge concerning facts of everyday life. Our reason tells us that this idea of past birth and karma alone can explain, for example, the degree of difference that exists between twins. How men like Shakespeare, with a very limited experience, are able to portray with marvelous exactitude the most diverse type of human character, sins, and so forth, of which they could have no actual knowledge. Why the work of the genius invariably transcends his experience? The existence of infant precocity and the vast diversity in mind and morals, in brain and physics, in conditions, circumstances, and environment observable throughout the world? Why do karma and rebirth? Sorry, what do karma and rebirth explain? Oh, okay. What do karma and rebirth explain? They account for the problems of suffering for which we ourselves are responsible. So these are the very good explanation that can account for what we observe in life. So based on this law of karma and the rebirth theory, we can explain all this. Number two, they explain the inequality of mankind. They account for the arising of geniuses and infant prodigies. They explain why identical twins who are physically alike enjoy equal privileges, exhibit totally different characteristics, mentally, morally, temperamentally, and intellectually. They account for the dissimilarity among child or children of the same family though heredity may account for the similarity. This is exactly what I found out about my family. I told my mother, I said, you got 9 brothers. Children, 6 boys, 3 girls. DNA quite similar. Apart from that, everybody is so different. Behavior, character, the way they do things and all those things. Even academics, studies and all those things. They account for the extraordinary inert ability of some men. They account for the moral and intellectual difference between parents and children. They explain how infants spontaneously develop such passion as greed, anger, and jealousy. They account for instinctive like and dislike at first sight. They explain how in us are found a rubbish heap of evil and a treasure house of good. They account for the unexpected outbursts of passion in a highly civilized person, and for the sudden transformation of a criminal into a saint. Angulimala is one of them. They explain how profligates are born to saintly parents and saintly child to profligates. They explain how in one sense we are the result of what we were. We will be the result of what we are. And in another sense, we are not absolutely what we were, and we will not be absolutely what we are. You know the meaning, eh? I explained to you all before. This is based on what Sir Francis Light said, and I really agree with what he said. When I read his statement, I was full of joy. He said, the past conditions us, but it does not dominate over us. You can understand the meaning or not? The past condition us means our past we cannot change. Our karmic nature, we are born of it, had to be conditioned and supported by it. True or not? That's why he said our past condition us. But it will not dominate over us. You know why? Because from now onward, moment to moment, I can change my life. Do you understand? That's why it's not predestination. It's not everything already like that. So why you going to strive? No. Whatever past is already gone, you can change. But from now onward, moment to moment, you can make a big difference to your life. Every being starts their cultivation at certain point in life. That's how they transform. The moment you understand this teaching, you transform and you will progress very fast and you become very different. That's why the past conditions us, but it will not dominate over us. This is understanding. This is why cultivator never look back. Past is already gone, not a reality. Future yet to come. This moment is the only reality. That's why be mindful, be heedful, take care of the moment, and you will have a beautiful life. So this is the most beautiful part. Then 14, they explain the causes of ultimate death and unexpected changes in fortune. This is all karma. Then 15. Above all, they account for the arising of omniscient, perfect spiritual teachers like the Buddhas, who possesses incomparable physical, mental, and intellectual characteristics. So we finally finish. Very good. So can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So next chapter, chapter 25, is more interesting. Paticca Samuppada. Who wants to lead? We go back to the usual way. Who wants to lead the next lesson? Paticca Samuppada is good training. This is the 12 link dependent origination. Anybody? Nobody. Nobody want to try. Never mind, let me know if you want to try. Just WhatsApp me. Then I will give you the approval. Then next lesson you come, you prepare. Then you present. Then we have a discussion. Okay? Yun Chan discussing with Adeline. So combine. Both combine. Do. How you point to Adeline? Adeline look at the book. Never mind, don't worry. If nobody wants, I take. but it's good practice. You can do it. Okay, now we can go back to the discussion. Just now, where were we? Where did we stop just now? Yun Chan said something, isn't it? What was it? I forgot already. Oh, the contemplation part. That one I already explained. Contemplation is very important. This is the second turning wisdom. When you inquire, means you throw out that question, why did the Buddha say that? Then you inquire further, how can I understand what he said? Just these two questions. Why did the Buddha say this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood? You have to reflect on it. Why did he say that? Then how can I understand what he said? Two simple inquiry, and the whole teaching come out. That's what I did before I know about the three turning. I keep on reflecting. Why did the teacher summarize all of dukkha that way? That's how I understand it. I awakened to it because my past was very strong. When I reflect and inquire, all this understanding come back to me. Especially after my nature connect. Then everything I read, I understand. As long as there is truth. And really, you don't believe. Things that were never taught to me before this life, I never learned. But straight away, my nature understands. Straight away, from inside, it knows the deep meaning. That's why all the things that I teach you is not from the what they call commentaries. The commentaries sometimes wrong. Not correct. Even those I have gone through with you all, Surangama Sutta, Heart Sutta, Diamond Sutta, and even all the other, what they call Mahayana Sutras. They are all very profound teachings. Because these are teachings from enlightened being, for enlightened being. From enlightenment means from the Samasambuddha teach to enlightened being, because these are teaching that only enlightened being can understand, because they are the teaching born of enlightened being. So they use words. If you awaken, not necessarily this life. In the past, you have awakened before, you have understood this truth. The moment you hear it, the impact is so great. Like the Four Noble Truths, I didn't hear about it, I read about it. And yet the impact was so strong. Straight away, I knew what the whole thing is. To me, at that time already, I saw the whole thing, like the whole secret of life, mundane and super mundane, so beautiful, summarized out. I said, nobody can do that. Whoever Sakyamuni is, he must be the real one, my nature. Tell myself. And does it impact upon you in that manner? Any of this teaching? Even all the other sutta, later on, I just flicked through. Even when I first started, you remember, I asked you for the book, do you have any English translation on Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta? But I haven't read it. He said, yeah, read it, I pass you one. He gave me the chanting book. Oh. Even though the chanting book's English translation was not so correct, some of the words run. But straight away when I read, I straight away knew what the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta is, the first sermon. Oh. Straight away, the whole teaching very clear to me. And I can even explain to you the three turning. The sutta never explained. And they never link to the three types of wisdom and how to do it. Not explained at all. No author, no book write about it. So all this is from the past. That's the reason why rebirth is true. Law of karma is true. If there is no such law, living being cannot be the way it is. A lot of things I witness in life cannot be the way it is. But because of this law, everything falls into place and perfect. And I saw it so clearly. Even when I was young, I stole 2 ringgit from my mother's ang pao. I kena left and right. And it showed it to me so clearly. Never worthwhile to cheat. Whenever I lie to my wife, when I went out for mahjong, I will lose like anything. But if I speak the truth, I make a lot of money. Because my mind is very strong. And I saw from these happenings, all the things that arise and happen. It cannot be otherwise. That it like show it to you so clearly. And when I experienced that when I was young, I knew this was something for me to understand. But that time I still don't understand because I was so young. When I stole that 2 ringgit from my mother, I was only 9 years old. No? 9 or 10 years old. But I saw how the card is so chair. No? Every year from 2 ringgit ang pao, I can make 200 ringgit. No? Through the Chinese New Year, we call it gambling. Puat kiao. That year, when I stole the 2 ringgit, I lost everything. Before even New Year, that such a man, I lost everything. Normally, I go and play pool first. You put a center pool, 10 cents each. Then about 10 to 11 players. 3 cards, the biggest card take. And I, every time from the pool, I will win. With the 2 ringgit, I will win about 20 over ringgit. Then I got enough capital to start poker. Poker ni money. So that seed money from 20 over ringgit, I end up winning sometimes 100 over, sometimes 200 over. And that was good money for me. Not everybody. No. The moment you cheat, you will lose. You don't believe me, you try. You will lose. You can't. Whatever you cheat, yeah, the card is very funny one. The Cantonese got this word, ho che one. You know what is ho che one? Really che one. I play pool that time, you remember? Every time my mind very strong, if I wheel it, the card will come on, very beautiful. So when I was down, together with my mother's $2, I got $4, I was down to the last 30 cents. So I got 3 more chances to win back. The first 30 cents I put in, I will to have 10 points. And it really come. Somebody got 3 pictures. And I lost the pool. Then after that, I will for the 3 pictures. The 3 pictures come. That was my second last 20 cents. Last 10 cents. And you know, after you got three pictures, you think you take the pool. Somebody triple ten. Got so chair, one or not? Then after that, I tell myself, I don't want triple ten, I want triple three or triple ace. And I got a triple three, you know. Somebody got a triple ace, you know. You believe or not? That's why chair and you like that, you know. After that, I don't want to play. I know already. I cannot steal. I cannot take money that do me. Even my mother want, I cannot. When I was young, I saw this. I knew it's a lesson for me. It tells me something. How can it be like that? Card game where you got such thing. And it really happened. And there are a lot of things you cannot explain. Even Mahjong was the same. Oh. After the classmate, time already. I just explained this one last. Four of us classmates, university mate. So there was one who came late. And that one, all the three of us don't like him. Well, he very arrogant. Then he very lancy in Cantonese. Understand? So these two guys suggest to me, Etio, tonight, we wall up him. I say, how can? He said, not wall up like that. We use the sign, the code. What card we call, we got certain sign. Understand? So we want to play cheat. Understand? Then he say, yeah, I want Tong Chi, I put my card this side. Then if I want Sok Chi, I put my card the other side. I close this side. Then if I want Man Chi, I don't put any card. Then you see how he throw his card and take his card. You know what card he's calling. Then if I calling big card, I will show you a sign. He say, I will pull my ear. All this type of trick. Then initially, I told her, I said, cannot lah. You do like that, you sure lose. Hey, he said, you better join us. Well, you know already. You cannot do that. I say, how? I say, okay lah, go ahead. So the three of us, you know what happened? We use that sign language. And we really take turn to win. No? That guy keep on losing. No? Until he was down to the last 300 chips only, you know. We got 5,000 chips. And you know what happened? I got this funny feeling inside, you know, that he's going to sweep, you know, that round. You know. And really, you know, he sweep all hours, you know. He thin wool. You know. He said, Tai Sam Yun. How much chip you have also no use. It's like full house. So tall. Then the two guys look at me, God like that one. I say, I already told you, cannot cheat. So after that, we all also very friendly. Whoever win, give supper. That's why friendly game. The winner pay for supper. So cannot cheat. There was the other time, he pay me wrongly, you know. I actually ate three double, I think. Some fun. Two double. 2856. Yipapa Ngpalok. So, he actually paid me 2008, instead of 280. The 2000 chip, green one, he throw to me. Then he collect another 800. Then it's all on my table, I say, Tai Lei Sei, because you very, very cocky, very lancy. So I wanted to sweep the chip into my drawer. The moment I sweep, inside tell me, Lei Sei Gang, this is not your money. Wow, after that, my card rotten like anything. Terrible. After that, nothing come. How you concentrate, how you focus, also no use. Chair, until like that. From that day onward, I dare not. Not dislike. No, because he is lancy. You understand why lancy? His character. But I don't hate him. I just say, Tai Lei Sei, understand? But you are such a person, understand? Understand? Because you are not a person that not only not a likable, how should I say, lansi, is in a way is arrogant, but he is not only arrogant, no, he really make you miserable, no. He lansi and he come and make you miserable, no. He say, hey, you want to sit here? This is not your place, oh, he say, no, no, go, go, go. Here we on. Take it out, no. Then, because he from KL, no. We all speak Hokkien, no. Kedah, no. Penang, Alastar. You know what he did, no? He came in, He's so lansi, He straight away tell us, no. Dito hai kolompo, he say. Kong kong dong wa, mwai kong fu kit wa. Oh, everybody look at him, no. Oh. Then later on, we found out, our engineering class, a lot from Penang, no. A lot from Johor, Alustar, all speak Hokkien, no. The Cantonese one, from KL, less than 10, no. We all got 100 over, no. So after that, we speak Hokkien, we try to go. Then he got no choice, he learned Hokkien. Then his Hokkien half past six. Luho bo. Like you lah. Well, he cannot understand. That's why he get angry, is it? In KL, speak Cantonese. Is it? Then later on, he more turned down, is it? Please, sir. Is it? Because actually he cannot understand, that's why he don't like us to speak Cantonese. Then later on we found out, there were a lot of Hakka. We started to speak Hakka. A lot of Hakka. We are engineering funny, a lot of Hakka people. Then I realized my class got a lot of Hakka. Hakka Lao. Hakka Lao. Quite a number of Hakka Lao. RN also. You Hakka Lao. Kang in, why we call us care? We are visitor. 客人, we migrate. Means we are guests when we arrive at. Chase out. Then we come down south. Oh, that's why we become 客人. So this is something I learned today. Good, thanks for explaining. But I cannot understand why Hakka is called cat. Cat is 客. Guess. Yeah. The imperial. No wonder. Now I understand. So the Hakka are the guests of the southern China. So I'm one of the cat. up to my generation, Pio, 37 generation Pio. You know what is Pio or not? Husband and wife, my parents, grandparents, for all Hakka, 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 Mary, all Hakka, until my generation. My brother, all Mary, either Teochew or Hokkien. I also marry Hokkien. Nobody marry Hakka. No? That's why my mother was initially very unhappy. Why you all don't like Hakka Mui? So, six brothers, all marry different dialect. Nobody marry Hakka. Oh God, got one, number four. The fourth brother marry a Hakka Mui. And you know what happened? My mother don't like her. She doesn't like my mother to stay with her. Understand? There's so many brothers. Why don't want to go and stay with the other brother? Why must stay with them? Then my mother told me some story. No need to tell you. That one is gossip. Then my mother come down here very unhappy. And he always tell me, he said, I thought Hakka Moy will be better. Sampo. He said, turn out the worst. So I said, not necessary, must be Hakka. Hokkien one, very good. You, Chana? Hokkien one, Mrs. Teo. Yeah, very good. Yeah, he liked my wife. Hokkien one, very good. And my elder brother also Hokkien one, also very good. So, not the dialect. It's that person's karma. We share married late already. Let us recall to mind. Then we also share married with Ajahn Pawaru. May this wholesomeness pave the way for there to be consistent condition for him to recover from his whatever brain surgery and illness or sickness so that he can regain back his health to lead a normal life, to be a blessing to all. Then now we will share merits with all beings. Akka Satta Chya Bhubhata Deva Naga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anamo Jitwa Chirang Rakantu Loka Sasana Itta Wata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabe Deva Anamo Dantu Sapa Sampati Siddhya Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu. Yawa Nivana Patiya Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, you can pay respect to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones. Then we end. Sadhu.